Hello, and welcome to the Wandering in Disney podcast. Thank you for tuning in today. In this episode, I'm joined by C. Lee of Mouse Ear Memories. We talk about her website and how that came to be, before focusing on allergy-friendly menus and gluten-free menus at Walt Disney World. And then finally, we draft our best reasons to go to character dining in Walt Disney World. So, I hope you enjoy the conversation. Here it is. I'm so excited to have C. Lee, creator and author of Mouse Ear Memories, where you can find comprehensive guides on food allergies and her being gluten-free at Disney World, along with so much other great information. Welcome to the show, C. Lee.
Hi, thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. I think you offer a lot of valuable information for a ton of people. I've told a few people I'm doing this episode, and they're like, oh, this will be great for so-and-so in my life. And that's really exciting and probably a big reason why you started your site.
Yes.
But before that, growing up, how much did you go to Disney World or any other Disney parks?
Very little. So my aunt took me when I was like five, and I don't remember it. And then I went with a good friend of mine in our like preteen and teen years. We would go in the summer and spend a week at Fort Wilderness. But growing up in Orlando, the Orlando area, we were like theme park people. So we went to SeaWorld, went to Busch Gardens, did Universal. Of course, Legoland wasn't a thing back then, but I'm sure I would have gone. Disney was always kind of like in my peripheral, you know, people would talk about it and stuff, but I didn't experience it, fully until an adult, besides those trips that I went to, over the summers, because we mostly did Magic Kingdom at Fort Wilderness. Yeah. You know, you take the boat over like 4 or 5 days in a row. We would just hit Magic Kingdom morning to night. And, what more can you ask for as a teenager? Yeah.
Camping in the summer at Fort Wilderness sounds miserable to me, a person that did not grow up in the humidity. But as a kid, you were probably like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah. And then into adulthood, you started going more and more, starting when?
So my oldest was born in 2015 and has some severe food allergies. They're better now, but they were much worse then. And I was on a Facebook group about food allergies. And somebody said Disney had excellent food allergy options, and they had this bakery that was allergy friendly. So I kid you not, I looked it up, and within an hour and a half, we were at Disney Springs at the bakery. We're like, all right, we're going right now today. And I wasn't able to eat anything because of the restrictions that my son had at the time. But I remember I bought a donut. It's the cinnamon sugar donut. So anybody who's familiar with food allergies at Disney knows these Erin McInnes cinnamon mm-hmm. sugar donuts. Or if you haven't gone yet, you will be very familiar with them by the time your trip is over, because they're very popular at the parks and the table service restaurants for breakfast. And I put it in my freezer, and I think that donut kind of started it all, because I said, one day I'm going to be able to eat that donut. And of course, I've enjoyed hundreds since then. But yeah, that's how we started.
That's great. And then when was the website? Mouse Ear Memories. When was that born out of Disney?
That was kind of like, you know, those things in your life where you start something and you don't realize it's going to be a big deal. That was my website. So my mother-in-law at the time, she had been in a severe car accident that had left her as a wheelchair user, and she had lost use of three limbs. And now she was a Disney Parks person. And she wanted to take her grandson to Disney World. So we started planning what that would look like. How do we do a week at Disney World with her, you know, disability needs and my son's disability needs? Like, how do we do food? How do we do rides? And so we planned a trip in the beginning of 2018, and it got pushed back because she ended up having stage 4 cancer. And I started Mouse Ear Memories in the summer of 2018 as a way to, like, compile all the information we found so that way I didn't have to, like, text her as much. That's how it started. So then she ended up passing away. Like, we delayed our trip, because of needs, and, we didn't get to go. And, she passed away at the beginning of November. And the week of Thanksgiving, I sat down and I became a full-time blogger overnight because I said, I've got to do something with all this grief. Like, I didn't get to take the trip, but I'm going to make sure that not only do I get to take my kids as many times as they could possibly want to go in the future, because they are absolutely sick of Disney at this point, but I want to help other people go on the trip that I should have gone on.
Yeah. And does that kind of remain the goal? Are you just hoping to pave a way for people that might otherwise think this is going to be a really hard time to vacation, or there's a lot of difficulties in vacationing to other places?
Yes. So I like to cover food allergy and gluten-free options for all the Orlando theme parks. And I do that because I don't think anybody should ever be left out on vacation. And I know that that was a big reason that we didn't go. And I know when I've talked to hundreds of other people that that's also been one of those deciding factors in their vacation plans. You know, and I don't think people, children or adults, should miss out on making memories and having a trip to Orlando because of their food restrictions.
Yeah, absolutely. Relative to like planning other trips, is Disney World like harder or easier to navigate with food allergies or being gluten free or any other obstacle?
Andrew, you've hit on my number one like thing I swore I would never say online, and that and that is Disney World easier than other places? Because that is something that's perpetuated on online groups. Right. And I used to say it because it does have a lot of easier components, but there's still the stress and anxiety. There's still the pre-planning. There's still the risk of having an exposure. And in that way, Disney isn't much different than other locations. But as far as being able to talk to a chef, being able to find food options, being able to use allergy menus, that in itself is easier than a lot of other locations.
That makes sense. And I can edit out anything you want me to.
Well, no, I just like to have a disclaimer.
No, I get it.
People will hear, like, Disney World's magical for food allergies. And then they'll go to vacation and they'll come back and they'll lament on these groups, or they'll message me and they'll be like, it was horrible. Like, we ate mac and cheese for lunch and dinner, you know, 5 days in a row. Where are all these magical items? And it's because they kind of think like, oh, it's so magical, I'm spending all this money, it'll just be super easy. And if you want that, you need to do a Disney cruise, because Disney cruise is, you know, it's more outlined as far as what food options you get versus Disney World. There's so many selections. If you go to the wrong locations, you're going to totally miss out on some hidden goodies.
Going off of that question or even answer, is there I imagine planning for allergies and gluten-free is just an extension of planning for like a whole Disney World trip, which can be quite, like you're hitting on, it's stressful. There's things to do for months and months in advance. So is that just kind of an extension? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, it's definitely an extension, and even more so because menu items and, like food availability changes based on supplier needs. And like, it might not change till the week before your vacation. And then it changes. And then you're having to kind of readjust plans. So, you know, I always encourage people, and we'll get into this later, but to make a bucket list and to make a backup bucket list. because you don't know what you're walking into when you go on vacation.
Sure. So plan ahead, get items that sound really good to you, and then go from there. If you just show up and need things that are available for food allergies or gluten free, then it might be a little harder to find things if you just show up and
well, yeah. So you what you're getting you into. Could just show up and you will be fed.
Yes.
But if you're like wanting those items that are like the Instagram worthy items, if you're wanting those items that everybody like fawns over in the Facebook groups, those take pre-planning.
Yeah, I'm sure. Going back to your website, how long has, well, I think you mentioned 2018, right?
Yeah, 2018.
Yeah, so about 5 years now.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
How has it evolved since you started it back then?
Oh, significantly. well, and like all things do. Yeah. You know, because when I first, so everyone said, and Mouser Memories was not my website that I was like interested in. I did it because I had already had other websites created, and I kind of did it for my mother-in-law. And so there was a lot of people who were telling me that I couldn't like break into the Disney realm because there was already too many big blogs. There's already too many people doing this. There was already people, you know, nobody is going to want to know about food allergy options. Nobody's going to know about gluten-free options. So at first, I really tried to do like just tips and tricks and family stuff and budgeting. And then I said, you know what? Screw this. Like, I don't care if I don't reach, but, you know, 100 people, like I want to do the food allergy news. I want to report on that. I want to have comprehensive guides. I want to do all the snacks. And I really started doing that heavily in 2021.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because, like, great. You know, the pandemic kind of misaligned some plans for everybody, obviously. but Disney Special Diets team has done, and I don't have any contacts in Special Diets, but just watching as a third party and documenting all the new changes as, like, a news source, it's incredible to see what Disney has done in the last 5 years, and I'm so excited for the next 5 years. For people with food restrictions.
Yeah. Can you give any examples on like how things have evolved for?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, you're good. The biggest change would be the introduction of allergy menus, mm-hmm. not only allergy menus at table service locations, but select quick serve locations in all four parks and the water parks also have allergy menus. So it makes it easier to walk in and order and have like a basis, because when you go to a restaurant, you're like, hey, I'm gluten free or hey, I'm dairy free. Sometimes you get blank stares and you're like, whoa, what can I get? I actually just recently had that. I just got off a Disney cruise and I went to Palo, which is supposed to be, you know, like really fancy and exclusive, and they didn't have an allergy menu. And I floundered. I was like, like, what am I supposed to order here? I'm so spoiled by allergy menus now.
Right.
And also the availability for people who do not have a severe cross-contact issue, they can use mobile ordering for individual allergies. So, like, you can't do gluten and dairy, but you could do just gluten or just dairy. But all of those are available on mobile ordering through the My Disney Experience app. And that's a new addition that happened in 2021 into 2022, which is very exciting for a lot of people, especially people like Peanut Tree Nut, because mm-hmm. those are more cut and dry. And then they don't have to wait in line to talk to a chef. They don't have to wait in line to get an allergy menu. They can just order on their phone and then be able to pick it up safely.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
That's great. Do you still do like just itineraries, tips and tricks, things like that on your website?
Or have I do.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. I'm very addicted to SEO now. Like,
yeah. I understand that, too. Is there... But you would say that like food allergies, gluten free is your focus now more, or do you kind of just try to do it all?
I kind of try to do it all. I'm kind of taking like a Disney food blog approach. Like I know they started with, you know, more food and then they expanded. And because I'm there so often, you know, I do pick up on things and I kind of, my note app on my phone is just a very organized, chaotic mess. You know, things that I find when I'm at the parks that I put into guideposts that I have on my website.
Since it has become kind of a job, and in some mm-hmm. ways, does that get in the way of your enjoyment of going to the parks?
I did have that problem in 2019 and into 2020. But after the pandemic, like after we took like that forced break, I was able to kind of separate my enjoyment trips, like when I go with friends, versus my, my work trips. So like on my work trips, I do not even bring my kids. I don't bring any family. Like I'm going there with the sole purpose of checking every quick serve location, every allergy book in a park. It's going to take me 8 hours. You know, I map that out ahead of time. I know exactly what I'm going to do. And I go and I do that. But then when I go with my kids or, you know, I go with friends, it's so much more relaxing. And I'm like, okay, you know, I know where to go, but I'm not checking things on purpose.
That's great that you can separate it. When you do go for work, like you mentioned, is it always like that? Are you going for 8 hours to like, to check menus? Is that basically what you do when you go for?
Yes, that is basically what I do. So, for example, I just did the Halloween party and, I got there at 7, and from 7 to 12:30 a.m., I was checking every food offering every food location to make sure that there was a menu with ingredients on the Halloween specialty items. I was checking the trick-or-treating. I was testing things. I was sampling the food and getting pictures and video so that way I could add that to my guides. But so the whole time I'm at Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party, I was working. Like I wasn't, I think I caught like 5 minutes of the parade by accident. Didn't catch any of the stage shows. And I met two characters because the lines were short.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
I think a lot of people kind of glamorize like writing about Disney parks or talking about them. And I'll never forget one of the first people I interviewed who works for touring plans is like, yeah, one day they had me sit for 3 hours and just count the number of people that passed down a path. there are some things that don't sound great. Going to check menus for 5.5 hours doesn't sound wonderful.
I know, right?
But I think a lot of people appreciate the service. So,
yeah.
So good on you. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned one of them, some of your favorite tips for vacationing with a food allergy or being gluten-free, and you can separate those however you want. So,
yeah, perfect.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so the first big tip would be to have a food bucket list and then a backup food bucket list. And that's because at Disney World, if you're there for a week, you could ideally have, you know, some really unique and specialty items, but only if you know where they're at and only if you plan them into your day. So, for example, at Port Orleans Resort, French Quarter, in Scat Cat's Cafe and in the club, you can get beignets. And these are allergy-friendly beignets, so they're top 8 free and gluten-free. And they're delicious. I highly recommend them. But you either have to be staying at Port Orleans Resort or you have to have a vehicle. Or you can catch a bus over. I recommend catching a bus from Epcot because Port Orleans bus is like number one when you walk out. Or you can catch it from Magic Kingdom because it's, again, super close. But you have to plan that into your day. You don't just accidentally stumble upon these beignets unless you made the conscious decision to stay at Port Orleans. Mm-hmm. And so that's why a bucket list is really important. Just like you would do a bucket list for characters or attractions, you need to have a food bucket list. And the next tip would be to bring a safe snack that is filling, that has some calories, because, and I say this as somebody who still gets anxious at the parks, you know, the anxiety plays tricks on you, the stress, the heat, the extra calorie expenditure that you're doing because you're walking around or you're dehydrated, all of those play into, your stress levels. And a lot of people will react to foods that aren't necessarily an allergy, but like they'll get an upset stomach or they'll break out in hives because of the stress that their body is experiencing because of the theme parks, not necessarily what they've been eating. And so sometimes people can confuse that. Or there's evidence to support that people will have a more severe allergic reaction if they've just been exercising or they're dehydrated. It's like a cofactor for people that need epinephrine. And so that's something to consider also, is making sure that you want to like maintain homeostasis. Like you want to maintain the point where you're not dehydrated, where you're not overheated, where you have safe snacks that you can quickly eat if you're starting to feel hungry. So that way you still enjoy your trip.
Yeah.
But you're also not, you know, sending your body into like shock mode.
Absolutely.
Which is so easy to do at Disney. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely. That's great. Do you have any favorite snacks that you pack?
Any favorite snacks that I pack? I love packing Laura bars because they don't melt.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then I also like to pack like fruit squeeze pouches. Again, because they tend to hold up pretty well in the heat. Because at Florida, like 10 months out of the year, anything you bring into the parks is going to melt.
Right.
And it's going to be very sad to eat it. But also like salty snacks like chips or pretzels or, you know, whatever else that you enjoy. Those are good things to have on hand if you're getting kind of hungry, but you're not exactly sure when or where you're going to be eating next. It takes the edge off.
Right. That makes sense. Great. Any other tips?
I think those are really it because, like, I wanted to kind of talk more about what food allergies are technically easier and what food allergies are harder, because those kind of influence how you plan ahead.
Sure. That sounds great.
Okay. So I'll jump right into it. So there's Disney's very good about the top 8 food allergies, and I cover the top 8. Now, the top 9 is adding sesame, which is new this year. Okay. And I'm trying to get my notes and because like my I have like 60 something thousand pictures on my phone and a lot of them are menus that I've, you know, organized into files and folders. But so like going back through all those and checking sesame and sesame's being added. But so I cover very confidently top 8, which is wheat allergy, dairy, which is also milk, egg, of course, from a chicken, because sometimes dairy and egg get, you know, confused. Soy protein, because Disney is very good about labeling things for soy protein, but not always good about labeling things for soy lecithin or soy oil. And in the allergy community, people are typically either a soy protein allergy or a all forms soy allergy. So I love talking to those kind of people to kind of explain the difference in how Disney approaches that, because especially in Europe or other countries, they tend to lump all soy together, where Disney likes to separate out the soy protein. Peanut and tree nut, which are two separate things, but are lumped together by Disney, and then fish and shellfish. So fish and shellfish and peanut are relatively easy. And by easy, mm-hmm. I mean that you still need to research, you still need to plan ahead, but you don't necessarily need to bring food. And you don't necessarily need to contact special diets, because Disney has their own special diets team, unless you're managing multiple food allergies. For people with a dairy milk allergy, even though Disney has plant-based menus now, a lot of those don't take into factor cross-contact or shared fryers, because those aren't necessarily important to the plant-based vegan vegetarian community, but they are important when you are managing an allergy. So dairy milk can be kind of moderate because you're trying to sift through plant-based menus while also taking into account food allergies. Yeah. Gluten-free is easy. Gluten-free has a lot of snacks. Disney, while gluten-free isn't an allergy, Disney kind of lumps it under the allergy umbrella. But there's still a lot of planning that you need to take into account if you want to hit all of those specialty items. And then egg can be moderately difficulty, because while we have like just egg substitutes for breakfast, and we do have an egg-free bread, you're missing some of the desserts unless you mm-hmm. do table service options. The allergies that I highly recommend contacting special diets for are coconut, because coconut oil is used very heavily at Disney World, soy, and combo allergies. So like if you're dairy, egg, and gluten, you need to contact special diets. If you have an allergy outside of the top 8, like food dyes or corn, you need to contact special diets, because you're going to be focusing a lot on table service locations and not on quick service locations. So those need reservations. You need to be able to plan ahead and occasionally talk to a chef before your trip even happens, so they can call you or text you to figure out accommodations for your specific dietary needs.
That makes sense. When you say contacting special diets, does that probably entails like an email, I'm guessing?
An email,
And then from there, does it get into that they contact you back and then you talk to chefs? What does it all entail, I guess?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that, because a lot of people, especially with one allergy, will contact special diets and then get really disappointed when they don't hear back from them. So when you contact special diets, they recommend 4 or more allergies or an allergy outside of the top 8. And then you'll email them, and it's you need to have table service reservations before you email them if you want a chef to contact you. They're going to send you back a generic email that talks about the allergy menus, where to find allergy menus at quick service locations, how to talk to a chef. And then from there, if you have your reservations and you have one of those allergies that fit into their category, then they will contact you. They'll email you back. Oftentimes a chef will call you specifically from the restaurant that you have the reservation at. I've even had chefs text, like I went to Hoop Dee Doo earlier in the spring and they were able to text me and confirm my allergy needs. I know, it was so cool. I was like, I hope this is new. I hope this is like a pilot, and then it like spreads. Cause that's less stressful than a phone call.
Sure. Absolutely.
But yeah, then you'll get some conversation from them. A lot of people get disappointed when they contact special diets and like, let's say they're peanut tree nut and special diets sends them back a generic email and nothing else. So then they aren't sure, like, where do I find desserts, or, you know, what is there about cross contact? And that's where I like to come in. And that's why I like doing what I do, is because I'm able to provide like that extra layer of assurance on top of what special diets may not be able to provide.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you. I never would have known. I know when you make table service reservations, usually there's a spot where you can fill in your allergies. But I'm guessing an email is much more efficient and will help you along the way if you have, like you said, four or more. Again, never would have known. So thank you.
Yeah, I know. It's like viewing Disney through a whole new lens. It's like, wait a second. There's more to it. Like, yeah, there's a lot more.
Absolutely. Unless you have other tips, do you have favorite restaurants to go to with allergies or gluten-free in mind?
Yes, I do. And I wasn't, you sent this to me earlier and I was like, there's no way I can narrow it down to just one.
if you say like 20, that's fine. I mean, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go through each park. Kingdom, you will always catch me at Skipper Canteen and I'm typically getting the fried chicken. When I am at Animal Kingdom, I really enjoy Satouli Canteen with like the mixed protein bowl. Yeah. And they also have gluten-free churros at Nomad's Lounge, which you can even get to go. So I do that often. At Epcot, I am constantly at Coral Reef Restaurant. Like, it's embarrassing. Like, I don't even take pictures when I go anymore. I'm like, I shouldn't be here. I should be testing somewhere else. But I find like Coral Reef is like my litmus test. Like, has anything changed? You know, are the chefs acting different? And if they do, then I can kind of investigate at other places. And then at Hollywood Studios, I'll tell you my least favorite, and that's and that's a restaurant I wouldn't recommend to my worst enemy. Okay. And that is Sci-Fi Dine-In. Sci-Fi Dine-In or Sci-Fi Diner?
I think you had it right the first time.
Okay. Yeah. I just like it so much. I'm like, ejectocito. Like, I cannot remember the name. Like, do not go here. That I only recommend that to like the tiniest niche group of people, and that is if you want a dairy-free milkshake. Okay. Sci-Fi has a dairy-free milkshake, and that is the only time I will ever recommend it.
Yeah,
it's not my favorite, but a lot of the other table service restaurants at Hollywood Studios are really good.
Sure, I was curious how many of your favorites would match up with my favorites. Me being a person that is lucky enough to not have any food allergies or anything. So we did pretty well. I definitely agree with you in Magic Kingdom and Animal Kingdom. Those are two of my favorite spots. And then I can take or leave Coral Reef, honestly, but it's been a long time. So maybe I need to go back.
Good. And you said you haven't been back in a while. So at Hollywood Studios, Toy Story, Rodeo Roundup. Yeah. Oh, so good. Highly recommend. I think it's becoming one of my favorites. It has so many good elements. I feel like they took a lot of constructive feedback and kind of put it into that restaurant.
That's great.
To give us what we wanted.
Yeah, fantastic. Do you think with more and more new restaurants, since they come online with all of these allergies in mind, do you think it will be better going forward for these new restaurants compared to the old ones?
Yes, absolutely. So what they're trying to find, excuse me, and I support this, but this is like a contentious topic in the food allergy community.
Okay.
So I'm just going to preface this here. I support making it as easy as possible for as many people as possible to eat and to eat what other people are eating. Like, I want one-to-one identical meals. Like, in my mind, that's what I want for vacation. And what that means, and Disney's kind of doing this, is that they're creating menus that are top 8 allergy friendly, top 9 allergy friendly, and gluten free. So the dessert is for everybody under that umbrella. And a lot of people will get upset, like, oh, I don't want a gluten free option, or oh, I don't want a dairy free option because they're only managing like an egg allergy or a peanut allergy. And I can understand their point of view, but this is Disney World we're talking about. So the easier it is to order, and the more consistent it is to order, because then I can consistently order those items and check them for quality and get reviews. And it's so much easier to recommend things to people when there's not, you know, 100 different things on the menu. It also means your food comes out quicker. It also means that if you're managing more than one allergy at the table, that everybody can kind of eat safely. And so I highly recommend that. And I'm happy to see Disney World is doing that. So they did that at Roundup Rodeo. And you'll see, like, most of the sides and most of the meat options are for all of the allergies, all top 9 allergies, and gluten-free. And I really like that because super easy to order. You know, I said all the points. But a lot of people have complained about that. And I hope that that complaining doesn't influence Disney to kind of separate things again, because that – It does add an element of almost like confusion, like, well, can I modify it for this allergy or can I do it for that one? Or, you know, and then the servers can get confused too. Like, oh, I didn't even know I had that option. You know, I've ordered things before and then come back 2-3 months later and they're like, I've never even heard of what you just said. And I'm like, right. Well, I got it here 2 months ago. And it's so hard too, because I hope cast members don't hate me for saying this, but my friend and I, we do something called playing tourist, and I go in and I don't tell them who I am. And I don't, you know, I act very like humble and like, I don't know anything. And, like, what are your recommendations? Cause I want to see how they treat me. So that way I can kind of gauge what I need to tell my audience. And so I'll go in and I'll play tourist and they'll be like, no, I've never heard of that. And then I have to be like, okay, well, I actually came here 2 months ago and I got it this way. They're like, oh, like, you taught me something new.
Yeah.
And I think that can be hard for guests, because you, if you're on vacation, you don't necessarily want to be over advocating for yourself. You don't want to have to be kind of like, and I don't think people are this way, but you don't want to have to be quote unquote like a Karen. You don't want to be like, no, I really need an appetizer, or I know you have gluten-free bread. It should just be something that's able to easily be ordered. And that's what I like about Roundup Rodeo, and that's what I hope Disney continues in the future, so fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be hard to navigate, being too assertive versus, I mean, you just constantly have to figure out how to talk to people and tell them what you need without sounding too angry. I mean, that
exactly.
Yeah, not an easy thing to figure out, I'm sure. Do you have a favorite theme park out of? Well, you can go anywhere, really. I mean, I don't know. Have you been to any parks outside of Orlando? Have you been over to Disneyland?
I have not been to Disneyland. Not it's to on the Disneyland. Bucket list.
Okay.
I've been enjoying. I've been enjoying the Disney cruises. Okay, I've gone on the Disney Wish 3 times since it debuted last summer, because I just can't seem to get enough of it. But that's not a theme park. So
all from Florida? Have you departed from Florida? There's the word.
I've been to, and I don't remember these, but I've been to Six Flags, and I went to one in Ohio. I think it was like.
Oh, sorry. I meant the cruises. Have you?
The cruises.
Yeah.
Let's get back to that. Oh yeah, just through Port Canaveral, just cool. Quick little That's weekend great. Trips. Yeah, they've been a lot of fun. Yeah. Okay, but favorite theme park. For me personally, you will always catch me at Epcot. That is, I cannot get enough. I don't think I'll ever be sick of Epcot, even with the construction that's been like 4 years now. My kids though, they love Legoland. Like that is our, it's so easy to do. It's so easy to do. There's plenty of characters. The lines are shorter. The rides are very like accessible for them. And then if I was like talking about like food allergies or gluten-free, I really love Animal Kingdom for gluten-free options, because you can get breakfast, lunch, and dinner there very easily. Magic Kingdom is good. And Magic Kingdom is good for everybody, but there's just so many people there. And it's, you know, like, there's a lot more to a Magic Kingdom day that you're trying to shove in. You don't necessarily need to add food on top of that. You know, you just kind of want quick, easy sustenance so you can get on with your day, because it's definitely like a 2 or 3 day park. I really like Hollywood Studios for food allergies also.
Okay. Yeah. Great. It's funny having, it seems like everybody I have on this show in one way or another is like, yeah, I love Magic Kingdom. It's great. And there's always like a little caveat to Magic Kingdom. And I totally agree with all of them.
My thing is, it's like, I love Magic Kingdom, but I have to get a reservation at Grand Flow Cafe so I can go get breakfast and walk over. So that way I don't have to deal with Ticket Transportation Center.
Sure.
Or like we've been staying at Fort Wilderness every like 6 or 7 months in our RV. And so I love that because you just take the boat over. But, yeah. You know, otherwise I'm like, sorry, kids, you know, we can't just pop into Magic Kingdom.
No, thanks.
Like, it's not happening.
And you're right. There are so many people there all the time, it seems like.
Yes.
So, yeah. Well, let's get to the draft. I think, unless you have any other tips.
Oh, no, yeah,
anything.
You're good.
Okay, great.
I guess I should say I have e-guides and blog posts for food allergies and gluten-free options on my website. I always forget. I'm like the world's worst salesperson. I'm like, by the way, I actually have these really comprehensive guides for you to use, and those are on my website. Or you can, of course, just send me a message on Instagram.
Absolutely. Yeah. Go check them out. We're going to draft our, I wrote this down. The best reasons to do character dining.
Okay.
I'm not going to ask any questions because I think that might give away one of your picks actually. So, I'll ask this. Do you do character dining pretty often?
Yes. In fact, I have one scheduled tomorrow.
Great. Where are you going?
Chef Mickey's for breakfast.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, I'll let you go first. I think we'll probably do 3 or 4 picks depending on time.
Okay.
And then, we'll just popcorn back and forth. So
okay.
Go ahead.
You said best reasons to do character dining?
Yes.
Okay. That would be for people, especially not staying at the resorts, it's a great way to get an afternoon break with the AC and hour of just sitting down.
Do you find that for all table service meals, basically? Or is character dining a little special in that regard?
I think character dining is special in that instance because it's you're checking so many boxes. Like, you're able to see characters. You're able to get in the AC. It's a little bit longer because I find some table service can get you in and out in like 45 minutes.
So fast.
Character dining is definitely 60 to 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You're spending longer time in the AC and, especially if you pick one like a buffet, like I love recommending Crystal Palace at Magic Kingdom, especially when I know it's going to be a rainy day, because that's a fantastic way to see characters, get pictures where you aren't soaking wet, be able to eat at the buffet and have like that longer break.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. There are, like you said, a lot of table service restaurants that just like get you in, get you out.
Yeah, they're rushing you.
Yeah, but character dining is a little slower. So, good one. I'm going to pick I think there's a value in not waiting in line for characters, and sure, this value is taking your money, essentially. Like, you're swapping time for money in this regard, but you get food with it too, so there is some value in there. And like most people, if you go to Disney World, you're probably going on like a 4 or 5 day vacation, or 4 or 5 days in the parks. Waiting in line for 45 minutes to see Mickey Mouse is gonna slow down your whole itinerary, so why not plan it into a meal? And I think that is, I think that's probably one of my main reasons why I do character dining. So.
Yeah, no, definitely. Getting them done at the same time. That's perfect.
It's always a value proposition for us bloggers who are trying to come up with the best itinerary possible.
I know. Just cram as much stuff as possible.
Yes. Yeah. All right, back to you.
Okay. You can do it on your off days. Like, there's character dining that doesn't require a ticket. That's a huge thing. Especially for people who are only coming for 1 or 2 days, but have like that third day with a window in the morning, or, you know, when they first arrive, that arrival day, that afternoon, where they can squeeze in a character meal and get to see characters and experience that Disney magic without, being inside the parks. And I even kind of recommend that to some people because you're paying a lot of money to step foot into Disney World proper. So doing a character meal on your off days or your relaxed resort days is a really good value mm-hmm. when you compare that to the price you're paying for your ticket.
With the Disney dining plan coming back, I think there's a few character dinings that are still just one credit, if I remember right.
Fingers crossed.
Yes. So even, especially then, I mean, you get a really good value in that way. Are there favorite, do you have any favorite character dining restaurants that aren't in the parks that come to mind?
Definitely Topolino's.
Yeah.
They just do breakfast, but they do like a brunch because the last feeding, I think, is like 12:30.
Yeah. And that's at the Riviera.
Mm-hmm, yes. And I think I've been more than 12 times.
Wow. Impressive.
Like when I say it's my favorite, like I mean, like it's my favorite.
Yeah. You mentioned that. And now I want to know the coral reef number. I wish you had kept track. Yeah.
You know, and I've stopped taking pictures. I mean, I have pictures of the receipts for like tax purposes, but it's probably close to like over 50 times. At least.
Yeah.
I mean,
impressive.
Yeah. It's a lot. Okay. So, okay. Back to character dining.
Sorry.
You're good. So especially as a parent, I love that, and this is not always guaranteed, so I want to like, you know, put that disclaimer in there, but a lot of times with character meals, you get to see characters more than once.
Yeah.
And I feel like that really adds like a layer of specialty, because like that first meeting, you can sign character books, autograph books, and get hugs and pictures and stuff. But then like the next time you see them, it's so much more relaxed. It's like, oh, I've already seen Mickey. Like I know, but I can just go up and give him a hug and talk to him. And I feel like the kids are more animated when there's not a lot of pressure there to get the picture and get the autograph. And then sometimes we've had character dining where we've got to see the characters 3 and 4 times. And by the fourth time, my kids are like, all right, cool. Like, nice to see you. But it almost provides like a comfort to me. Like, okay, I know we've gotten this out of the way. Like you've gotten to see your character and now I don't have to worry about like that one-off chance where I'm standing in line and they freak out and then I have to wait in line all over again. That doesn't really happen at a character meal.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to stick on the character theme and say that sometimes they're in different costumes. Tusker House comes to mind, which is a favorite character experience for me. If you're just going for the food, I like Boma, which doesn't have any characters, a little better than Tusker House, but Tusker House is in Animal Kingdom and Mickey and friends are costumed in their safari gear and that's great. And I believe there's a few others, where the characters have special outfits. But that's the one that comes to mind. So.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a good option. Yeah. And then I think this will be my last one because I'm running out of
benefits here.
But the ability to see some like rare characters. So for example, at Artist Point, at Wilderness Lodge, you get to see the Queen from Snow White,
and she's terrifying.
Right, she is terrifying. And then I saw on social media the other day that they actually had the prince there with Snow White. Oh. And I guess he was like training, but you never know who's guaranteed, because that's like always the disclaimer with character dining is like you should see 3 to 4 characters, but sometimes there are additional ones or sometimes there's not. And like I missed 1900 Park Fair for Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
It was so nice to be able to see her. Because her hours kind of vary depending on whether she's in the UK or at Magic Kingdom.
Right.
And she can be kind of not on the schedule for a period of time. But then I knew that I could go see her at 1900 Park Fair when that was still open, which should reopen, but
yeah, it's who the knows. It's the only one that hasn't reopened.
Well, so Trattoria Al Forno reopened without characters, which I don't think they're coming back, and that's sad because that had two princes. It had Prince Eric and it had Flynn Rider from Tangled.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And my kids love that because, you know, they love the prince and the princess component. Because, like, you can just get princesses, but, like, we wanted the other half.
That was a fun meal, too. I enjoyed that.
Yes, it was so fun. And, like, the skillets, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, like still being able to see characters that are harder to find or not found in the parks unless it's like a special event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And I have one more pick then, and I think I might be cheating a little bit, but I'm going to stick with what you just mentioned, Storybook Dining at Artist Point. And uh-huh. That's just my pick. It is my favorite character dining experience. And I think speaking as someone, again, without any food allergies or anything, but it is my favorite character dining as far as food goes, too. I really enjoyed our meal there. And it's been a few years and it hasn't been. That one took a while to reopen. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And it reopened with the similar structure. Like they changed the menu some.
Yeah.
But like as far as food allergies were concerned, it was almost identical to what it was before it had closed. Okay. But I know like regular options, they had changed some of them. But it was still like the 3-course meal and then mm-hmm. the extra dessert at the end when you paid. But yeah, I think kind of what you're saying though is that it's the experience of.
Yeah. I thought just combining everything, the characters, like you mentioned, the queen, she terrifies me, but she's great. And then, and then all the other characters coming around and then how beautiful that restaurant is just in general. And,
right.
And then I thought the food was, maybe a step above some of the other character dining spots. So, just all in all, I thought it was fantastic. So
I'm
excited to go back. Yeah. All right. Great. Thanks for drafting with me.
Fantastic.
Can you plug your website and your guides one more time? And then,
sure.
That'll be about it.
Perfect. Thanks, Andrew. So I cover food allergies and gluten-free options at the Orlando theme parks with an emphasis on Disney World at mouseearmemories.com. I also have comprehensive guides for gluten-free and then separately for top 8 food allergies that you can buy on my website, or you can access free blog posts and information on my social medias for news and updates for food allergies and gluten-free options at Disney World.
Thanks, Celie. I think you provide a service that so many people need, and it's so useful. So thank you for all you do, and thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate it, Andrew.
Again, thanks to Celie for coming on. She was so informative and had so much great information. Go check out mouseearmemories.com. Go buy her guides. Go follow her on Instagram, all under mouseearmemories. And then once you're done there, go check out wanderingindisney.com. We've covered the news from the last weekend. Destination D23 was in Orlando. There's Animal Kingdom, Magic Kingdom, and Epcot news. We have a new review of Tiana's Palace over here on the West Coast at Disneyland. And we'll have a bunch of other things coming up in the next week or two. There's a new itinerary for Disneyland and California Adventure all in one day that I'm working on. And I'm excited to put that out there. I also have another podcast called Trip It To Me. It's all about travel, kind of a lot broader than just Disney, but we do talk some Disney here and there, and we plan itineraries for different places around the world, as well as do pop culture things. So go check out that if you enjoy this, or even if you don't enjoy this, maybe there might be like a very small chance you enjoy that. So we'll see. You can email us wanderingindisney@gmail.com, and up on the on our hosting site now, which you can find the link for in our Instagram. They have a spot where you can support the show and where you can leave me voice messages. So, do any of those things. That would be wonderful. And I really appreciate you all listening. We'll be back soon with another episode. Thank you. Bye.